Sorry, it didn't make the little noise.
It's all right, we're recording. I got it working.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to City of Dreams, the 1960s. Big news tonight, Malt.
What's our big news?
I have a new team member for Team Bollywood. It is Spiral, since they dropped below two people. Or they dropped the two people last week, so I gave them somebody else. If anyone else drops the two people, I will find a replacement for you. The scores right now, Team Heaven Sucks 19, Team Utterly Absurd 83.5, Team Bollywood 18, Team Oscar 43.5. Team Bollywood told me this week that their losing streak is at an end and they are going to kick ass this week.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
I'm super excited to hear all of these monologues because I'm really, really excited about the lineup.
It's almost all the monologues are done this week. It's going to be an interesting week. 1960 Psycho screenwriter Joseph Stefano, she wouldn't even harm a fly speech in her jail in his jail cell. First of all, let me say this: people are still complaining that I don't have enough girl monologues, but this week, of the 10 monologues, four of them are girl monologues. So I don't know why you guys are still complaining. I'm doing the best I can, people. This is a girl monologue. It's a female monologue in his jail cell. Blanket wrap Norman Bates, played by Anthony Perkins, but mother's voice supplied by Virginia Gregg, offered his final internal thoughts after being overtaken by mother in voiceover. The voice of mother spoke in Norman's head and condemned her son for the crimes while she claimed that she was harmless. We have on this monologue up first is Rochelle. If Rochelle's the only one on it, it is worth 6 points. If there is somebody else on it, I will say so after this monologue. So let's get it started, Malt.
It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son, but I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He's always been bad, and in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare like one of his stuffed birds. Oh, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see, and they'll know. Oh, and they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Up next is Genesis.
It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son, but I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He was always bad, and in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Oh, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even gonna swat that fly. I hope they're watching. They'll see. They'll see, and they'll know, and they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
That was both Genesis and Rochelle on the Psycho Monologue, Malt. It's for 6 points.
Ooh.
You wanna, we'll start with Rochelle. Do you wanna start?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. I thought that she had like really good tone. Like I love the tone of her voice. And I think I use that word a lot, tone, but it does mean a lot to me. Like especially with monologues. But it had good emotion, but I feel like it could have used a tiny bit more like of an insane kind of twist, I guess. And I think that's about it for me.
For me, And I don't want to speculate because I don't know. But when I hear you perform these monologues, I really get the sense that you're not really sitting down and studying the monologues as much as just reading them. And I really just want you to take the scene setup into account and really get into it, because I'm trying to figure out how to say this in a way that makes sense. It felt like you were reading the monologue to somebody else as a monologue and not performing the monologue as it's as you performing the monologue, if that makes sense. You were a little bit broad, not like over the top, but like you would read like this and you would make certain things go like this and then back down, but it didn't really make sense in as far as the monologue goes, and it felt really reedy to me. And I'm not trying to be like mean or anything, because I think you're an amazing actress, you know that. But I'm trying to give you a better sense of where I'm coming from when I critique you, because I know that you mentioned this week that you hadn't won any of the monologues. You didn't mention it like you're upset about it, but you just mentioned it. And so I was trying to this week really figure out what it is that I would like to see you doing more of. And I'd really like to see you just studying the monologues more and really placing yourself in the role of that character instead of just reading the monologue, if that makes sense. But I didn't think it was a bad read at all. Let's move to JC, though. Are you there, Malt?
Yeah, okay, sorry. Cool. Just people moving around my house.
That's cool. What's with JC?
Right away, I got the insanity thing. Like, oh my gosh, it was kind of creepy. I loved that. I think it was a little bit flat at times, like, despite the insanity kind of thing. And I think you had a bit of a slow pace to it that could have been, I don't know, just a little bit faster, like, to hold the attention a little more.
I can see that. It was really creepy, though. Like, it may have been because you're a male doing a female voice. It sounded like I don't know, it was something really creepy about it. There was, like, an underlying maliciousness to the tone that you had, which I really got into, and it really creeped me out. I enjoyed it. Did you pick a winner?
I did.
Who did you pick?
I picked Rochelle.
I picked JC, so it splits down the middle. Good job, Rochelle. Points for your team. Team Heaven Sucks. That is 3 points each. So Team Heaven Sucks gets 22, and the Utterly Absurdists, I mean, they don't get 22, but they have 22 now, and Utterly Absurdists have 86.5 now. Good job, guys. We are moving on to The Hustler, 1961. It's worth 8 points. There are 4 people on this monologue. No one ever goes for the lower scoring ones.
I know. I don't get that.
It's free points, Malt.
It is.
All right. We're going to do an experiment, Malt. I'm going to allow you to read.
Oh, gosh. You're going to allow me to
read. I'm going to ask you to read.
Oh, no.
I copy-paste for you.
I already have it up, you jerk.
Yeah, but then you're like always like, play clip.
Sorry.
So I took the liberty of taking all that stuff out. That for when you read, that way you don't read that part.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Screenwriters Sidney Carroll and Robert Rawson, you don't know what winning is. After winning the ultimate returning pool match with Minnesota Fats, played by Jackie Gleason, hotshot pool player Fast Eddie Felsen, played by Paul Newman, indicted himself and his greedy manager promoter Burt Gordon, played by George C. Scott, for being inhumane and driving girlfriend Sarah Packard, played by Piper Laurie, to suicide.
It's indicted himself, noob.
I don't care.
Also, this is The Hustler from 1961. The first person on this monologue is the new girl, Spiral. Ooh. And we've got Zigbar, Jeffers, and Reed on this monologue as well. Let's see what Spiral's got.
We really stuck the knife in her, didn't we, Bert? Boy, we really gave it to her good. Then we twisted it, didn't we, Bert? Of course, maybe that doesn't stick in your throat, because you spit it out just the way you spit out everything else. But it sticks in mine. I loved her, Bert. I traded her in on a pool game. But that wouldn't mean anything to you, because who did you ever care about? Just win, win, you said. Win, that's the important thing. You don't know what winning is, Bert. You're a loser, because you're dead inside. And you can't live unless you make everything dead around you. Too high, Bert. The price is too high. If I take it, she never lived. She never died. And we both know that's not true, Bert. Don't we? Huh? She lived. She died. Boy, you better. You better tell your boys they better kill me, Bert. They better go all the way with me. But if they just bust me up, I'll put all those pieces back together again. Then so help me. So help me, God, Bert. I'm gonna come back here, and I'm gonna kill you.
Next up, sexy, sexy hipster scientist Zigbar.
We really stuck the knife in her, didn't we, Bert? Boy, we really gave it to her good. Then we twisted it, didn't we, Bert? Of course, maybe that doesn't stick in your throat. But it sticks in mine! I loved her. Bert, I traded her in on a pool game. But that wouldn't mean anything to you. Because who did you ever care about? Just win. Win, you said. Win, that's the important thing. You don't know what winning is, Bert. You're a loser. Because you're dead inside, and you can't live unless you make everything dead around you. It's too high, Bert. The price is too high. Because if I take it, she never lived. She never died. And we both know that's not true. Bert, don't we? Huh? She lived. She died. Boy, you tell your boys. They better kill me, Bert. They better go all the way with me. But if they just bust me up, I'll put all those pieces back together. And so help me. So help me, God. I'll come back here. And I'm gonna kill you.
Up next is Jeffers.
We really stuck the knife in her, didn't we, Bert? Boy, we really gave it to her good. Then we twisted it, didn't we, Bert? Of course, maybe that doesn't stick in your throat, because you spit it out just the way you spit out everything else. But it sticks in mine. I loved her, Bert. I traded her in on a pool game. But that wouldn't mean anything to you. Because who did you ever care about? Just win. Win! You said win! That's the important thing! You don't know what winning is, Bert. You're a loser. Because you're dead inside. And you can't live unless you make everything dead around you. Too high, Bert. The price is too high. If I take it, she never lived. She never died. We both know that's not true, Bert. Don't we, huh? She lived. She died. You tell your boys they better kill me, Bert. They better go all the way with me. But if they just bust me up, I'll put those pieces back together again. Then so help me. So help me, God. Bert, I'm gonna come back here. And I'm gonna kill you!
Up next is Read to Me. I went half me, half Rochelle on that one. Nice.
We really stuck the knife in her, didn't we, Bert? Boy, we really gave it to her good. Then we twisted it, didn't we, Bert? Of course, maybe that doesn't stick in your throat, because you spit it out just the way you spit out everything else. But it sticks in mine. I loved her, Bert. I traded her in on a pool game! But that wouldn't mean anything to you, because who did you ever care about? Just win. Win, you said. Win, that's the most important thing. You don't know what winning is, Bert! You're a loser! Because you're dead inside, and you can't live unless you make everything dead around you. Too high, Bert! The price is too high! If I take it, she never lived. She never died. And we both know that's not true, Bert, don't we, huh? She lived. She died. Bert, you better... You tell your boys they better kill me, Bert. They better go all the way with me. But if they just bust me up, I'll put all those pieces back together again, and so help me. So help me. God, Bert, I'm going to come back here, and I'm going to kill you.
All right, that that had somebody from every team on it.
It did.
And that was a tough one. We both had to actually go back and listen to several of them again. But we picked winners. Yes, we did.
Woo!
Woo! Let's start with Spiral, the newcomer. I want to say this, Spiral, before we start. And I don't mean to take away anything from anybody on those psycho monologues, but you sent me a take of that psycho monologue since you weren't going to use it just for the lulz, and I really liked it, and I think you might have won that psycho monologue if you had done the psycho one. But you didn't, so whatever. Okay. I think taking time to take pauses would help. Maybe take a beat before talking about how you loved her. It felt a little bit rushed, but I really liked the build. It had a really good build. It had good emotion, but it felt kind of rushed to me. What did you think about Spiral?
I think that Spiral definitely, surprised me in a really good way. I don't know if I've heard anything from her before, because you're saying newcomer, and that's automatically in my head as newcomer. So, I don't know, but, I loved the emotion in it, and I thought that I loved the emotion, and you definitely went in, all out with it. But I feel like there was some times where you seemed a bit too happy about it, which made it take a little turn towards, oh yeah, I'm glad she's dead kind of thing. I don't know, but outside of that, I think that you did very well.
What did you think of Zigbar?
Zigbar. Just every single time I have to comment on that accent. I love your accent, Zigbar.
All right,
I really
calm down,
do.
Calm down. Keep it in your pants.
All right, but, I, once again, the emotion, you all did so well with the emotion, and I think that for, anything to really critique on, there was a few pacing issues, but they weren't really that bad. I feel like I was just really searching for something to say because I did enjoy it a lot.
I really liked it. I felt how screwed up you were over the whole situation. I loved her part. Again, I didn't feel the weight there, but it's kind of a reoccurring theme on that part. But I like the choices you made for this overall, and I like how you got quiet at the end where you said you were going to come back and kill him, because I think everybody else yelled that, and you got real quiet. And to me, that's even scarier, because it's like you mean what you're saying. Let's talk about Jeffers. For me, it started off a little big for me. It sort of sounded like fake crying, but then it transitioned really nicely into anger, and I liked what you did with the rest of the scene, or the rest of the monologue. What about you?
For Jeffers, once again, I'm commenting on the emotion, because god damn, you all did so good on the emotion.
I know,
and
usually
that's what made it so tough.
This is the hard one tonight. This may be the hard one. Usually we have the one every week that's hard to decide. This may be the one.
Yeah, I think it might be. I really loved, your variation and your changes in, the volume and intensity. Because, while you did go from, a bit of a yell to a bit of a whisper, you kept it, audible, which I thought worked very well. Because that's usually my problem. Sometimes when people do that, I can't hear them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, the emotion you put into it was really real. And that's what I enjoyed the most.
Reed. It started off, you had a really heavy tone, it had great levels, I felt you getting progressively angrier. I thought it was a very nice read, sir. What did you think? Nice read from Reed?
I think that, I'm sorry, by the way, there's a random bird in the background.
Happy birds.
Yeah. I once again put good emotional variation and all that stuff, because you guys killed me on the emotion.
I know.
And I'm just going insane over it. I'm probably going to, save these monologues forever. But I think that, it just made me think of, when he was commenting on Rochelle Yor's monologue that she was just reading it and she hadn't studied it. I feel like you definitely go through it and study what it is that mm-hmm. is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you can really hear that. So I think that, like, you do very well with that kind of thing. But I actually think that, like, you actually lost a bit of, like, the feeling towards it when you tried to make it sound too realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you got, like, really emotionally breathy. Because while that's always a good thing to do, like, to make it seem real, because in real life, people aren't going to sound perfectly clear when they're upset.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like with monologues and acting, you have to really strive to make sure that it's heard. And you lost a bit of the words when you were, like, taking a shaking breath kind of thing.
This was a tough one. In the end, for me personally, did you ever narrow it down to two people?
I had to narrow it down to four.
I got it narrowed down from all four, who I loved all four. I got it narrowed down to between Zigmar and Reed for me. And
for me, I had it narrowed down between, I think, Jeffers and Reed.
Okay. Well, for me, I really liked Zigmar, how he started off kind of quiet, and then he had like an outburst where he yelled, and at the end he got quiet again. For me, the choices Zigmar made me feel the monologue more effectively, so I chose Zigmar.
I chose Jeffers.
Okay. Well, let's divide the points. But Reed gets honorable mention for being in both our final two.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see. This monologue is worth 8 points, so Team Heaven Sucks gets 4 points, and Team Oscar gets 4 points.
Woo.
So right now, the scores: Team Heaven Sucks 26, Team Utterly Absurd 86.5, Team Bollywood 18, Team Oscar 47.5.
Wow.
Yes, the next one, 1962, West Side Story. Nobody did it.
I know.
Screenwriter Ernest Lehman. It was actually from 1961, this movie. Farewell to a Slain Lover. Maria Natalie Wood's anguished ranting at gang members protecting slain lover Tony's body on the ground. Do you want to do it, or do you want me to do it?
I'll do it. Okay. I just need to know, like, is it pronounced Chino?
Yeah.
Okay, so long as I didn't mess that up. Alright. Stay back! How do you fire this gun, Chino? By pulling this little trigger? How many bullets are left, Chino? Enough for you? Are you? All of you? You all killed him. And my brother. And Rip. Not with bullets and knives. With hate. Well, I can kill now, too. Because now I have hate. How many can I kill, Chino? How many, and still have one bullet left for me? Don't touch him.
Oh, yeah.
I always have those pacing issues when I just read.
Yeah.
Bah, pacing issues.
To Kill a Mockingbird, 1963, worth 10 points.
I'm so excited for this.
We've got Axel from Team Bollywood and Russ from Team Utterly Absurdist on this one.
Ooh.
Screenwriter Horton Foote. Closing court argument at the Robinson rape trial. Lawyer Atticus Finch made a convincing closing argument to the jury, imploring them to acquit his falsely accused black client, Tom Robinson. Did you have to read this in school?
To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. It was actually one of, like, the few books I enjoyed that they made us read.
I had this, and I had Lord of the Flies assigned. I mean, I think I read both of them after I graduated. Like, I kind of BS'd my way through them in school. But I really enjoyed them when I read them later on, so.
I enjoyed To Kill a Mockingbird in school, and the only other thing I enjoyed during school was The Crucible.
I've never read that.
I like The Crucible.
Up first, we have on this monologue, Axelden.
Ooh.
Yeah, let's listen.
To begin with, this case should never have come to trial. The state has not produced one iota of medical evidence that the crime Tom Robinson is charged with ever took place. It has relied instead upon the testimony of two witnesses, whose evidence has not only been called into serious question on cross-examination, but has been flatly contradicted by the defendant. Now, there is circumstantial evidence to indicate that Mayella Ewell was beaten savagely by someone who led almost exclusively with his left hand. And Tom Robinson now sits before you having taken the oath with the only good hand he possesses, his right. I have nothing but pity in my heart for the chief witness for the state. She is the victim of cruel poverty and ignorance, but my pity does not extend so far as to her putting a man's life at stake, which she has done in an effort to get rid of her own guilt. Now, I say guilt, gentlemen, because it was guilt that motivated her. She has committed no crime. She has merely broken a rigid and time-honored code of our society, a code so severe that whoever breaks it is hounded from our midst as unfit to live with. She must destroy the evidence of her offense. But what is the evidence of her offense? Tom Robinson, a human being. She must put Tom Robinson away from her. Tom Robinson was to her a daily reminder of what she did. Now what did she do? She tempted a Negro. She was white, and she tempted a Negro. She did something that in our society is unspeakable. She kissed a black man, not an old uncle, but a strong, young Negro man. No code mattered to her before she broke it, but it came crashing down on her life afterwards. The witnesses for the state, with the exception of the sheriff of Lincoln County, have presented themselves to you gentlemen, to this court, in the cynical confidence that their testimony would not be doubted. Confident that you gentlemen would go along with them on the assumption, the evil assumption, that all Negroes lie. All Negroes are basically immoral beings. All Negro men are not to be trusted around our women. An assumption that one associates with the minds of their caliber, and which is in itself, gentlemen, a lie, which I do not need to point out to you. And so, a quiet, humble, respectable Negro, who has had the unmitigated temerity to feel sorry for a white woman, has had to put his word against two white peoples. The defendant is not guilty, but somebody in this courtroom is. Now, gentlemen, in this country, our courts are the great levelers. In our courts, all men are created equal. I'm no idealist to believe firmly in the integrity of our courts and of our jury system. That's no ideal to me. That is a living, working reality. Now, I am confident that you gentlemen will review, without passion, the evidence that you have heard, come to a decision, and restore this man to his family. In the name of God, do your duty. In the name of God, believe Tom Robinson.
Russ, up next.
To begin with, this case should never have come to trial. The state has not produced one iota of medical evidence that the crime Tom Robinson is charged with ever took place. It has relied instead upon the testimony of two witnesses whose evidence has not only been called into serious question on cross-examination, but has been flatly contradicted by the defendant. Now, there is circumstantial evidence to indicate that Myella Ewell was beaten savagely by someone who led almost exclusively with his left. And Tom Robinson now sits before you, having taken the oath with the only good hand he possesses, his right. I have nothing but pity in my heart for the chief witness for the state. She is the victim of cruel poverty and ignorance. But my pity does not extend so far as to her putting a man's life at stake, which she has done in an effort to get rid of her own guilt. Now I say guilt, gentlemen, because it was guilt that motivated her. She has committed no crime. She has merely broken a rigid and time-honored code of our society, a code so severe that whoever breaks it is hounded from our midst as unfit to live with. She must destroy the evidence of her offense. But what was the evidence of her offense? Tom Robinson, a human being. She must put Tom Robinson away from her. Tom Robinson was to her a daily reminder of what she did. Now, what did she do? She tempted a Negro. She was white, and she tempted a Negro. She did something that in our society is unspeakable. She kissed a black man. Not an old uncle, but a strong, young Negro man. No code mattered to her before she broke it, but it came crashing down on her afterwards. The witnesses for the state, with the exception of the sheriff from Lincoln County, have presented themselves to you gentlemen, to this court, in a cynical confidence that their testimony would not be doubted, confident that you gentlemen would go along with them on the assumption, the evil assumption, that all Negroes lie. All Negroes are basically immoral beings. All Negro men are not to be trusted around our women. An assumption that one associates with minds of their caliber, and which is in itself, gentlemen, a lie, which I do not need to point out to you. And so, a quiet, humble, respectable Negro, who has had the unmitigated temerity to feel sorry for a white woman, has had to put his word against two white people's. The defendant is not guilty. But somebody in this courtroom is. Now, gentlemen, in this country, our courts are the great levelers. In our courts, all men are created equal. I'm no idealist to believe firmly in the integrity of our courts and of our jury system. That's no ideal to me. That is a living, working reality. Now, I am confident that you gentlemen will review, without passion, the evidence that you have heard, come to a decision, and restore this man to his family. In the name of God, do your duty. In the name of God, believe Tom Robinson.
That was Russ. Let's start with Axel then.
All right.
Axel, go ahead.
I was going to say, are you first or me?
You can go first if you want. I don't care.
All right. Let's see my notes. I think that, like, you really sort of channeled the lawyer kind of thing. And I think that with that, it makes me understand how... Like, I heard you were trying to go more modern with it, and I kind of understood that with the way that you portrayed the lawyer kind of feel. Like, you sounded confident, which is always good, but, like, I feel like you were just a little too, not reedy, but just a little too slowish, pacing issues.
The problem is, Atticus Finch is a really likable character, and you sort of channeled, like, the smug asshole lawyer in your reading. It was very smug-sounding. You're trying to get this client off who was falsely accused of rape, and you needed to be, like, invested in this, and it was just, like, so, like... It was very, like, you felt very removed from the situation. It was very smug. Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, I think that actually kind of... In a way, like, that was pretty much what I was trying to go for, so...
If you were going for, like, sort of, like, the way people think of lawyers now as being kind of, like, smug assholes, you totally nailed that. So, like, I don't think it was – I think your acting was good. I thought it was a good reading, but it was completely inappropriate for this character. Russ, you – I felt like you were really impassioned by it. I felt like it meant something to you. I felt like you were really trying to get this character off. I liked yours a lot.
Yeah, I think that, like, Russ definitely brought me, like, right into the book. Because, like I was saying before, like, To Kill a Mockingbird was probably one of my favorite books that I had to read in high school. So I definitely really liked it, and I thought it sounded realistic in the opposite sense of the smug lawyer kind of
thing. Yeah, this is a very iconic book and movie, and Atticus Finch is a really well-known literary character. And I think if you are going to do this monologue, you really have to research the character. I went with Russ.
I did too.
10 points to Team Utterly Absurd. That's 96.5 they are at now. We are now moving on to 1964, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Stopped Worrying and Learned to Love the Bomb. Temporary butterflies on this one. I'm excited. Screenwriter Stanley Kubrick, Terry Southern, Peter George, ultra patriotic glory pep talk. After receiving instructions to bomb a target in the USSR, Major T.J. King Kong, exclaimed that they were going to have nuclear combat with the Russians as he donned his 10-gallon hat. I'm excited to hear Temp's take on this.
I am too.
Let's listen.
Well, boys, I reckon this is it. Nuclear combat toe-to-toe with the Ruskies. Now look, boys, I ain't much of a hand at making speeches, but I got a pretty fair idea that something doggone important is going on back there, and I got a fair idea of the kind of personal emotions that some of you fellows may be thinking. Heck, I reckon you wouldn't even be human beings if you didn't have some pretty strong personal feelings about nuclear combat. I want you to remember one thing. The folks back home is a-counting on you. And by golly, we ain't about to let them down. Tell you something else. If this thing turns out to be half as important as that figure it just might be, I'd say that you're all in line for some important promotions or personal citation when this thing's over with. That goes for every last one of you, regardless of your race, color, or your creed. Now, let's get this thing on the hump. We got some flying to do.
That was Temporary Butterfly.
Ooh-hoo.
That is worth...
4 points.
Yes, that goes directly to Team Oscar.
Ooh.
51.4 over to Team... They have... I'm sorry, 51.5 points they have right now.
Nice.
I know. Okay, next up we have... 1965, The Sound of Music. Sundance Girl is the only one on this monologue, so there's going to be points going directly to that team.
I'm excited to hear it.
Sound of Music, 1965. Screenwriter Ernest Lehman, A Prayer for Her New Family. Young Austrian Abby postulant Maria, after taking on the temporary job of governess to look after the 7 children of widowed strict Navy Captain George von Trapp, prayed at her bedside during a fierce thunderstorm, blessing the captain and the children. We're going to hear that directly at the beginning of part 2, so stay tuned. Where's my stop button?